Support for this podcast of The Exchange is brought to you by the Dagoba Group, a global diversity and inclusion consulting practice with specialties in unconscious bias, leadership dynamics, and client engagement. Authors of the book, The Inclusion Dividend. More at thedagobagroup.com.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Opportunity.
And Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org. That's imagine.dh.org.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. While enrollment in traditional public and private schools declines in New Hampshire, homeschooling is growing strong. More than 5,000 kids are now homeschooled in the Granite State, up from just 340 in the late 80s. And the state numbers track the national trend toward home education, with 3% of all students passing up brick-and-mortar schools. As this becomes a more popular education option, it's also become more diverse, with families choosing home education for a wider variety of political, religious, and educational reasons. But as this group has grown, it's also become less regulated by states, with many now requiring little in the way of notification and assessments. And while the majority of kids seem to do well in homeschooling, often surpassing their peers academically, some analysts are concerned about whether the system leaves too much room for interpretation about what children need to know to function successfully as adults. Today in The Exchange, honing in on homeschooling, and let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. With me in studio is Amy Gall. She's chair of the state's Home Education Advisory Council, coordinator of the New Hampshire Homeschooling Coalition, and Amy is a homeschooling parent of four from Bath, New Hampshire. And Amy, really nice to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us, Rachel Coleman, executive director of the Coalition for Responsible Home Education. That's a group founded by homeschool alumni who advocate for homeschool children. Rachel is from Indiana. She was homeschooled herself K through 12 and wrote her master's thesis on homeschooling. And Rachel, thank you also for being with us.
Thank you.
Well, and Amy, let's focus on New Hampshire, but obviously, as I said, these trends track nationally. Why are more people choosing this option?
Well, I think that many people decide to homeschool because they want to have closer ties with their children. They want to have more control over what their children are learning. And in many instances, the schools are just not meeting some need that they have as a family or that their individual children have.
Why did you decide to homeschool your four kids?
When my oldest was three, he was starting to read, and having been through K through 12 public school in New Hampshire and the gifted program in elementary school, I knew what he was in store for, and I felt like that's not really what I wanted for him. I wanted him to be able to work to his full potential. I wanted him to not get social messages that it wasn't okay to be smart. So I felt like he would probably be held back somewhat academically, pushed a little bit too much socially, and I wanted to make sure that he had what he needed to succeed.
When you say I knew what he was in store for, sounds like you experienced that yourself?
I did, yes.
Tell me a little more about that.
Well, as a student in the public schools in the 70s, it was difficult to be a child who liked to learn. It's oftentimes not socially acceptable amongst young children to want to succeed in academics. So there's social pressure to not do that.
Yeah, I remember in middle school where I was, there was one boy who was called the brain. And
right.
Everybody made fun of him for being the brain. And now you think that's crazy. He's really smart. That should be celebrated.
That's right. Yeah. So I wanted to make sure that we had an opportunity to celebrate that instead of having him come home with bullying or anything like that.
How about other parents that you're in touch with, Amy? What are some of the other reasons that they choose for homeschooling?
Well, I mean, on the other end of the spectrum, you have children who are special ed students, and sometimes the school district doesn't step up to do what they're supposed to do with special education, and the parent gets frustrated and fed up with fighting with the school district, and it's just easier for them to pull the child out and teach them at home. And there certainly is a large enough homeschooling special needs community in New Hampshire that they can find like-minded parents and network with them and try to find good means for home educating their special needs children at home. You have two e-kids who are exceptional, both gifted in some way and special needs in another way. And then once you get into it, then it's certainly easy enough to just continue with other siblings. And it provides a really nice way for siblings to develop a close relationship.
Yeah, and I definitely want to get to you too, Rachel. But one more question for you, Amy, about just who's doing this in New Hampshire. The image that people have of homeschooling, and it's probably outdated, but the image is it's conservative Christians and hippies.
Well, there certainly are plenty of those homeschooling, but I think it's much more mainstream now. It's a more viable educational option out there for parents who are looking for something else. It's certainly a way to provide a more personalized education or a smaller classroom size if you think about people putting their children into private school. The private school numbers are dropping because I think people see that they can provide a similar type of education for a lot less money by homeschooling.
How about you, Rachel? As I said, you are not only founder of a group of homeschool alumni, sort of that generation of young adults who were homeschooled. You were homeschooled yourself, K through 12. What's your perspective on why homeschooling seems to be growing more popular?
Well, first of all, I want to push back a little bit on the idea of this sort of massive growth right now. I've seen there's been a lot of different reports, actually. You know, homeschooling numbers are skyrocketing. Sometimes people connect it to the Common Core. And it is true that there are states that have seen a substantial jump, but there are also states that have seen a decline in the number of homeschooled students in recent years. So I think the picture is a little more nuanced than, you know, these sort of reports often suggest. I do think that overall nationally, it likely is still growing. But I don't, you know, I don't think that it's, you know, sort of this apocalyptic number that, you know, sometimes it seems like, you know, reporters wanting to look at specific states' numbers are predicting. As for its growth, I want to, you know, sort of add on to that idea of, you know, religious and hippie homeschoolers, that image. Scholars have often divided homeschoolers into those two groups when they look at them sort of, you know, historically in their development over time. And the first homeschoolers actually were these, you know, hippie homeschoolers, as they're often called, in the late 70s. And then evangelicals and fundamentalists began to homeschool, especially in the early 80s. And in fact, historian Milton Geither calls the 1980s the changing of the guard because of the change from sort of the more inclusive, secular, you know, very open structure of homeschooling communities to, by the end of the 80s, a lot of these communities had statements of faith. You know, you had to be a Christian to join a group. And in states like New Hampshire, you still end up with, you know, there's actually two different state groups, the more inclusive one and the Christian one. And that's very common, although in my state, Indiana, there's actually only the one, the Christian group. But in recent years, there's been sort of a increasing mainstream nature to homeschooling. And I was actually at a birthday party this weekend and was talking to a guy with preschool kids, and we were talking about this, and he doesn't have any personal experience with homeschooling, but for him, that just seems like one more educational option to consider. That when you're going to put your kids in school and they reach school age, it's like, do you want to send them to the public school? Maybe the charter school? What about this alternative school? How about homeschooling? There's a lot less of an assumption today that you're going to put your kids in public school.
And
whereas maybe 40
Rachel,
years
yeah.
ago that was.
If I could ask you, Rachel, you've written that in general you had a good homeschooling experience, but there are aspects that you think could have been better or that should change. Give us your top two or three, Rachel, of, you know, areas where you think homeschooling might have been better.
Okay. Well, in my case, my parents homeschooled me for both academic and religious reasons. So as I stated when we were talking before the show, my mother put a lot of emphasis on the academics, on providing an education for us, and I really, you know, appreciate the effort she put in there. But because they were homeschooling for religious reasons, they really only socialized us with other evangelicals who were very similar to us. So I didn't really know anyone growing up who was not also an evangelical Christian. And when I left and went to college, that made things very jarring. I had to learn how to interact with people who were completely different from me, and it was difficult at first to make that transition. And so I think it's important for homeschooling parents to ensure that their children have social interaction with a wide variety of people. And I think, I don't know how much of, you know, my sort of insular socialization as a child was intentional, because I also think that we tend to associate a lot with people who are similar to us, whether that's religion, whether that's education level, and that, you know, if we're not careful, if we homeschool, you know, it can be easy to sort of fall into our children mostly socializing with other families like us, because that's who we're socializing with.
And let me just...
But on the other hand, I mean, sorry, I just want to say, I don't want it to seem like there aren't, you know, plenty of homeschoolers who socialize their children more widely. There are. I just want to emphasize that that's important. And I do have one other thing I was going to mention, but go ahead.
Yeah, let me just jump in, Rachel. There's so much to talk about here. There's the educational piece. There's more to talk about there. There's the oversight piece. There's the social aspects, which often comes up. Let me also remind our listeners that you can join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Join us. We're taking your questions, comments, personal experiences with homeschooling today in The Exchange. You can send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. So lots to talk about on the education front, but Amy Gall, since Rachel's going there, let's go there. I'm sure you've heard over the years concerns about the socialization aspect of homeschooled kids, that they don't interact with kids who are different from them.
Yes. Sometimes people have a perception that homeschoolers are backward socially and there's not a good opportunity for socialization. But we find that to be just not true, because there are so many opportunities out there for homeschoolers, private businesses, museums, all sorts of opportunities are provided where those groups cater to homeschoolers and set up classes and encourage them to come during school sessions so that, you know, homeschoolers like to take advantage of that time when there aren't big crowds. So I think that it's kind of a little in-joke in the homeschooling community when people say, what about socialization? You say, oh, I know, I have to cut back, because it's really easy to get derailed from your main focus of your academics and find too many social outlets.
I wonder if it was different when Rachel was growing up, because now, as both of you have said, homeschooling is more mainstream. I wonder, though, if, you know, 15 years ago, it was more sort of insular.
Well, I've been homeschooling for 15 years, and I don't think that that was really the case. When my oldest children were toddlers and we were out kind of exploring the community together and finding, you know, different gymnastics or art and whatnot, there were always homeschool classes that were going on during that daytime period when a mom would be out with toddlers and preschool children. And that was one of the reasons that I chose homeschooling, actually, is because I saw the homeschoolers that were out there, and I thought, I want my children to be like them. You know, they were able to socialize across a broad spectrum of ages and cultures, and it was much nicer to watch than kids who are fighting and bickering, you know, between siblings and just being segregated to a same age group.
Again, the number here in The Exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter, 1-800-892-6477. Did you want to jump back in, Amy?
I did.
And then another question for Rachel.
I just wanted to say something about the insular nation, in Christian groups being somewhat insular. I think that in many cases, parents who are homeschooling for religious reasons choose to only socialize their children in those groups because they want them to go out into the world with a very strong base in their faith before they're exposed to other ideas. So I don't know that it's really an accident that that happens. I think it's very intentional. So even though there might be some cognitive dissonance when that child goes out into the world and finds that there are other viewpoints, I don't think that was a mistake on the parent's part. I think it's intentional.
Rachel, go ahead. You want to jump in?
Oh, I totally agree it was intentional, but I don't think it was beneficial in my case. It meant that I had to figure out from scratch as a college student how to interact with people who were vastly different from me. So I think it's important for kids to be exposed to a variety of viewpoints. And you're absolutely right that there are so many social opportunities out there for homeschooling parents. Should things go, you know, my kids are currently in elementary school, public schools, but should that end up not going well, you know, my daughter's very bright, should she end up, you know, starting to scale that back because she's being made fun of or something like that, I absolutely would consider homeschooling. There are a lot of opportunities, but it's very dependent on the parents engaging in those opportunities. I've spoken to homeschool alumni who literally left the house twice a week their entire childhood for church and Bible study, and that was it. And that's a choice on the part of the parents. It's not that there weren't opportunities out there, but in her case, this specific alumni I'm thinking about, her parents are very introverted. They just never took the time to go get those opportunities, and they also had religious reasons for homeschooling. But the result was that she ended up being 18 with acute social phobia, so she couldn't even, like, even going out in public was hard for her. And I don't want to act like that's the norm. It's not. The point I'm simply trying to make is it's in the hands of the parents how many of these opportunities they go out and pursue. And so we advocate for homeschool children. And so one thing we do is encourage parents to take their children's social needs seriously, to ask their children, you know, do you feel like you have enough friends, enough outlets? Do we need to look for more opportunities? And different children will need different things. When I was homeschooled in high school, I didn't feel like I needed more friends. I didn't have, you know, I had sort of a small set of core friends that was enough for me. But my sister was much more extroverted, and it drove her nuts that she was at home most of the day every day. And high school was a very hard experience for her, and my parents didn't always take that quite as seriously as they should have. So our position is basically to encourage homeschooling parents to listen to their children and to take their children's need for social interaction seriously, while completely, you know, understanding and acknowledging that there are all these opportunities out there for parents to go get, and sort of encouraging parents to go and pursue those opportunities.
Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. A couple of Facebook comments I'll share with you. Maura says, I did homeschool my son. I never intended him to go to public school, but as a single mother, it was free daycare. She says, when he was in sixth grade, I got a freelance job. And she had a situation at home. It's a long story. But she said there was no way I was sending him back. And his life only grew richer from that day on when she began homeschooling. Mara, thank you for that. Tim says homeschooling and private school should be against the law. If all children were made to go to public schools, people would be more concerned with how they were run and they would be forced to improve. Allowing people to opt out of them will only cause them to become worse. So that's Tim. And then Melissa follows up and says, choice. People should be allowed to have that choice. What are your thoughts, Amy, on those comments from Tim and Melissa, especially sort of a back and forth there?
Well, I think that I agree more with Melissa. I think that there's not any one type of schooling that will meet the needs of each individual child, and trying to force somebody into a system that doesn't work for them is not going to make them successful, and I don't think it will improve the system either. I think the system is pretty rigid and difficult to change for parents. So I do get a lot of calls from people who are in a crisis situation with their children in public schools and are looking for some other option.
What sorts of crises do you hear about?
I hear about bullying from students, bullying from teachers, students who have experienced so much social and academic pressure that they've developed anxiety and really are dysfunctional, and they need some other way to get their education because the school system's just not working for them.
And private school is way too expensive.
It is, yes, and depending on where you live, it might be also inaccessible.
Right, and we do have charter schools, but they're limited in New Hampshire.
That's true, yes. Although the Virtual Learning Academy Charter School, the VLACS online school, is very popular amongst people who are in that situation. And it's notable that although you're doing that education at home, it is a public school.
Here's an email from Jeremy that just came in. I began to consider homeschooling in recognition to the huge problem of relational and sexual gender-based violence I witnessed as a student in middle school, high school, and college. Jeremy says, I continue to witness this as a teacher in the school system before homeschooling myself. He says, I continue to homeschool my children for these and many other reasons, including the ability to have our family focus on the important issues of activism and social justice, and to have the ability to have our primary focus be on our own family. Jeremy, thank you for the email. After a short break, we'll take a lot more of your emails at exchange@nhpr.org and your calls, questions, comments, 1-800-892-6477. Coming up also, we'll hear from a 30-year-old UNH grad who was homeschooled, reflecting back on her experience. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today on The Exchange, we're looking at homeschooling's increase in New Hampshire and the limited role that the state and local districts play. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Our guests are Amy Gall, chair of the state's Home Education Advisory Council, coordinator of the New Hampshire Homeschooling Coalition. Amy has homeschooled her four children. She's from Bath, New Hampshire. Rachel Coleman joins us from Indiana. She's executive director of the Coalition for Responsible Home Education, a group founded by homeschool alumni who today advocate for homeschool children. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Joining us now on the phone is Katie Hamilton. She's general manager at Einstein's Workshop, a science and engineering learning center based in Burlington, Mass. Katie's originally from Brookline, New Hampshire. She was homeschooled from third grade through high school. She's a graduate of UNH. And Katie, good to have you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Well, just real broadly, Katie, first, how would you grade, pardon the pun, your homeschooling experience?
Oh, gosh, A++.
A++.
It was definitely a very diverse experience for any one person to have, I suppose.
Diverse in what way?
Well, I think a lot of people focus in on high school and homeschooling because that's kind of the hard one. I think elementary through middle school, the topics are, you know, fairly easy to digest. There's a pretty prescribed way of doing things. High school, it gets a little harder. But in high school, I was, my main projects were I was working at the Brookline Library. I was working on a friend's high school senior thesis film, and I was taking college classes. So it was really, you know, not a typical high school experience, but at the same time, I think I got a lot out of it.
Did you, once you got to college, did you feel, Katie, that you knew everything you pretty much needed to know to be a successful college student?
To be a successful college student, no, there was still stuff to learn.
I mean, and that's true for anybody, but go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. I suppose that, you know, like any new college student, there's balancing out your study time and your social time. But I guess I wasn't a huge stranger to that because I had been doing it. I suppose I was a little spoiled because I had been at technical colleges and community colleges, and they're very understanding of balancing work and study. And then going to a full-time college, there's a little bit more, you are here now, this is your full-time student attitude. But it wasn't much of an adjustment to make.
So maybe being homeschooled helped you figure out that sort of work and leisure time, whereas, you know, traditional students might struggle with that because mom and dad are looking over their shoulders.
I suppose. I mean, I would say I certainly had a lot of guidance from my parents in making sure things were done on time in high school. But yes, definitely taking a form of class that isn't public school, I think, was very helpful because I didn't have all of those constant reminders to get things done on time.
Constant reminders from the classroom teacher.
Correct.
Was there any part of this, Katie, that you feel didn't serve you? You said A++, so maybe not.
Well, it's funny. What Amy said about socialization being the in-joke, there definitely were times where I wish I had more constant contact with friends, but at the same time, I think the quality of the contact I had was excellent. And honestly, if I had seen them every day, we may have driven each other crazy. But one of the outcomes of that is that I did end up making a number of friends online who are, to this day, still some of my best friends.
Why did your parents decide to homeschool you, Katie?
Oh, gosh. I went to a private school for first and second grade. And my mom kind of looked at it and she said, for the amount of money I'm spending on this, I can probably do better. And so for the first few years, you know, we went on some field trips. evaluated curriculum together, and, you know, it was really kind of a blast.
Was it ever not a blast?
Well, you know, I had to do, I suppose, my vegetables. I had to do my math, and that was always, it was never an issue getting it done. It was just an issue of me not wanting to do it. So there were certain core topics that my parents insisted I study that I suppose I resisted on a bit, but...
So it sounds like they homeschooled you for pure education reasons. They thought, you know, for the money we're spending on private school, we might as well do it ourselves. Why wasn't public school an option for you, Katie?
That is a good question. I think, well, I suppose I am a formerly gifted child. What they said is that they didn't want to send me to public school because they didn't think it had enough opportunities. Yes.
Opportunities in terms of just enriching your experience?
Yeah, in terms of going above and beyond the curriculum.
Because you were that gifted learner.
I suppose. People tell me I was, but I wasn't there.
Well, hold on, Katie and Rachel Coleman and Amy Gall. Lots of people want to jump into our conversation. So let's go to them. And Amelia's calling from Jackson. Hi, Amelia. Go ahead. You're in the exchange.
Hi. Excuse me. So I'm calling with a kind of a question about sort of the greater cultural and social significance of homeschooling. And I guess I'm, as a young person at this time, I'm really aware of kind of the gap between different socioeconomic classes. And homeschooling, I think, is, it's pretty apparent that it's something that people who have financial, educational resources are able to participate in, whereas people who are of a lower socioeconomic status don't have necessarily have the time, finances, or education to participate in it. And I guess one of my concerns with the sort of trend, it sounds like, towards homeschooling is what does that mean for that gap between socioeconomic classes? I think that that's already a big issue in our culture, and creating more of a gap between socioeconomic classes, I don't think, I personally don't feel like that is necessarily beneficial for our society.
Amelia, yeah, thank you very much for the call. It's a question I had as well, and I'd love to hear from you, Amy, and maybe you too, Rachel. Amy, you first, please. You know, this idea that those who homeschool are the people who can more afford to homeschool, and we're creating even a bigger gap between economic classes in this country.
Right. Well, I can tell you personally that we give up, and I think most families do give up one wage earner's worth of salary in order to afford to do this. So, you know, as far as a single parent being able to do that, I think it would be very difficult. But our family makes huge sacrifices. We're not well off, and we're always struggling. But we feel that the time that we spend with our children is more important than expensive fancy vacations or anything that we could buy them. So, you know, you have to kind of make those decisions. As far as the educational aspect of it, studies have shown that there is not a difference in appreciable effect on the achievement of homeschooled students based on the certification or education of their parents. And I got some of those statistics from NCES, I think, from the U.S. Department of Education. But I think that parents who feel like they might not have the educational background they need to home educate can certainly find resources in their community to bolster their own education so that they can provide that to their children, learn alongside their children. And, you know, especially for elementary school, it's very simple. It doesn't take a long time. It doesn't take, you know, a huge degree in order to do that. I mean, it really, I think just about any high school graduate could homeschool elementary school students. But it does get a little bit more challenging when they get to be in the more advanced topics.
And Rachel, to you, on a related point that Amy and our caller bring up, what nationally in general, I know every state's different, but in general, what are the educational requirements for homeschooling parents?
That's an excellent question. There are 9 states where homeschooling parents are required to have a high school diploma or some other form of, you know, sort of showing adequacy. But in the remainder of the states, so that's over 40 states, anyone can homeschool. And in fact,
11% of homeschooling parents, according to the National Center for Home Education, or the National Center for Education statistic, 11% of homeschooling parents do not have a high school diploma, and this is both parents. So an 11% of kids are being homeschooled by parents who do not have a high school education. And studies have found that there is a significant difference in performance between, you know, students homeschooled by parents without this education and students homeschooled by parents who have a bachelor's degree. And we have spoken with, you know, numerous homeschool graduates whose parents just, you know, say gave up when they got to algebra because they couldn't figure it out. So there is a distinct difference in between being homeschooled by parents who don't have either the educational background or sort of the same maybe level of educational drive, and parents, on the other hand, who are like mine, who are college graduates, very driven educationally. And I do want to note that homeschooled students are significantly less likely than other students to take the SAT and the ACT. And those are generally used as measures of being college-bound. There is a decent amount of evidence to suggest that homeschooled students are much less likely than other students to attend college. Now, part of that might be that there are some who are pursuing other routes and who, you know, feel like that sort of formal educational atmosphere isn't for them. But based on conversations I've had with homeschool alumni, there are many, many, many who do not feel like they can even get into college because they do not meet those qualifications because of deficient education at home.
And Amy, I can see you want to jump in. And then Katie, another question for you.
Yes, I'd like to address a couple of those points. Where she says that there's no diploma, I don't know if those studies determine whether or not a parent has received a GED or a HISET would be in this state, where I know a number of people who have dropped out of school way back in the 80s and then went on to college later. So I wonder about those statistics. As far as algebra goes, when you start getting into those higher level classes, it's certainly easy enough to take a part-time class somewhere else. In New Hampshire, we have access to part-time classes in the public school system. There are lots of great resources online now. You could use Khan Academy or you know, any number of other resources in order to get those upper level classes in.
So if you're being homeschooled and your mom or dad is really struggling with calculus, you could go to the local public school and take calculus?
You can, yes.
Katie, did you access the public school in your experience here in New Hampshire at all, or were you 100% at home?
I didn't access the public school, but I did take several community classes. I know there's a lot of free stuff put out by the New Hampshire Humanities Council that we did. Also, to the note of algebra, I have a friend who was actually unschooled, and so math was not his forte, and he didn't end up doing it. And he's about my age, and a couple of years ago, he decided, I'm going to teach myself algebra.
Wait, unschooled? What is?
Unschooled is, it's a brand of homeschooling where the student pretty much completely dictates their method of learning.
It's child learning.
Wow. I think my kids would choose to play video games all day. I just, you know, not to put them down, but yeah, go ahead, Katie.
Well, there is often a certain amount of parent intervention in saying that's too much computer time, but he had a very enriching experience and basically learned how to learn. And so as an adult, he decided he actually did want to learn these skills now, and he just went out and did that. And I think that's something that's fairly rare to find in adults.
That are, they're just going to say, I don't get this, it's a gap, and I'm going to go out and learn it. How did your friend feel, though, about sort of emerging from K through 12 or college or whatever and not knowing math?
Oh, well, he certainly knew math. It was specific algebraic concepts.
I see. Okay.
How he felt, I don't know. He did end up going to college and getting a four-year degree.
Okay. Katie Hamilton, thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Katie Hamilton, general manager at Einstein's Workshop. She's originally from Brookline, New Hampshire, and was homeschooled from third grade through high school. She's a graduate of UNH. Amy, did you want to jump in on unschooled? I'd never heard that before.
Yes, unschooled. Yes, it's child-led, so the child would decide what to learn. But when unschooling is done right, it's when the parent provides a very rich environment for the child. So it's not just, oh, go off and play video games and you're disengaged. The child is engaged in their community in multiple ways.
At what age is it appropriate to take that approach?
Well, some parents decide to do it right from the start because children are natural learners. So they're naturally curious, and if you take advantage of that, then you can carry it through. But I did want to address quickly the idea of college readiness and the ACT and SAT, because I think many colleges now are feeling that that does not reflect college readiness and are dropping it. So whether or not homeschooled students decide to take it might be based on the schools that they're deciding to apply to.
Let's take another call. And Peter is calling from Keene. Sorry, Rachel. Actually, we're going to go to someone else from Meredith who does not want his or her name used. We normally don't do that, but this person feels like they need to remain anonymous. So go ahead, Mr. or Mrs. Anonymous.
Hi, that's me. I just wanted to share a little bit of my personal experience by way of commenting specifically on oversight for homeschool. I very recently fled a very conservative religious background, and one of my express reasons was to get my children into public school. The plan was to homeschool for the express purpose of isolating them from anyone of an alternate belief, from isolating them from the teaching of evolution. And this is not just my family. This was the pastor and his family, the assistant pastor and his family, several other families within the church. And I feel like the current requirements are so low. And the homeschooling can be great for particular families, and I don't underwrite that. But at the moment, the push by organizations like the HSLDA, the Homeschool Legal Defense Alliance, is for less oversight, less, you know, any kind of way to check up on these families. In the state of New Hampshire, you have to test every year, but you don't have to report it. So if there's nobody to raise a red flag, all of these families can and are flying under the radar. And there's nobody wants to address that.
Well, and we should talk about that pullback that we saw in 2011 of the oversight in terms of assessments and so forth. But just your personal story. So are your kids in public school now?
My son is in public school. I had to go to court and get a court order to be allowed to enroll him.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling in. Lots to talk about. Thank you. So, Amy, to you first, here in New Hampshire, and then Rachel, I know you've tracked this nationally. What kind of oversight does feel appropriate and what doesn't? Our caller's correct. There's been a pullback of assessments and other requirements over the last couple of years.
That's true. There has. I want to say that, you know, I'm sorry for her situation and that's unfortunate, but that the government's place is not to have oversight over families. And the U.S. Supreme Court has upheld the parents' right to direct their education of their children as they see fit and raise their children as they see fit. So there's, in a pluralistic society, we have to understand that some people are going to choose to make these decisions themselves, and we have to allow them to do that. It's their right to choose to live their life the way that they want to. Short of abuse and neglect, of course, you wouldn't want to condone abuse and neglect of children, but in those instances, that's what DCYF is for. So,
Division of Children, Youth, and Families.
That's right, right.
You know, it raises a broader question, though, and Rachel, you first. What is the responsibility of the state, of the society at large, to keep track of what kids know or don't know? This is a big, big, big question.
Yeah, we like to say that parents have the right to choose how to educate their children. I'm sorry, I hope you didn't hear that. That was an extra phone call there. Okay, we like to say that parents have the right to decide how to educate their children, but not the right to decide whether to educate their children. Amy has said the government doesn't have the right to interfere in families, but children have the right to an education, and the government needs to back that right up by ensuring that children do receive an education. And obviously, the education children receive can look different in a homeschool setting. It should not look identical to the public school setting, but there should be basic, basic protections in place to ensure that an education is being provided. We at the Coalition for Responsible Home Education get emails from people concerned about friends or relatives or family members where there is no education taking place in a homeschool setting. And we have spoken with many homeschool alumni who were not educated or who were vastly undereducated. And actually, the reason I got into this movement in the first place was my younger brother, who was in high school at the time, contacted me. And I was an early student graduate school.
Oh, and Rachel, I'm so sorry I have to cut you off, but we will finish the story in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're talking about the rise in homeschooling in the Granite State, some of the reasons more families are choosing to homeschool, some of the situations and issues and concerns that come up. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Rachel, just before the break, you were talking about your concern that there isn't enough oversight, in your opinion, in many states in terms of, you know, how extensive an education homeschool kids are getting.
Right. And to,
you're talking about your brother.
Right. And so my younger brother was in high school, and I was an early graduate school, and he contacted me, and he said he was concerned for a friend of his, another homeschool girl. She was 17, so he got in contact with her. Her parents hadn't educated her since fourth grade. She desperately wanted to be able to go to college, but not only were they not doing anything to teach her, they were not getting her any sort of material to learn from, they were also expecting her to work in their home businesses and turn the money over to them so many hours a week that she didn't have time to even try to teach herself out of textbooks. And she desperately wanted to be able to go to college, but her parents had not given her older sister any records of any education at all, and she knew it would be the same for her. And so I did call social services on the family, because in Indiana, where I grew up, the only way to, you know, sort of catch a situation of this form of educational neglect is to call social services. And they did go to the home, and I talked to her several years later, and she thanked me. She said it made things better. It was too late for her, she said. You know, she's already 17. Nothing really changed for her. But that her parents started educating her younger siblings more effectively. But the problem with relying on social services to report, you know, to deal with educational neglect in a homeschool setting, as Amy just suggested, is, first of all, half of all states do not have educational neglect in their child abuse and neglect statute. So social services does not get involved in situations of educational neglect in half of all states. And this includes states like Alabama, where there's also no oversight of homeschooling by the school district or the State Department of Education. So in Alabama, if a child is being educationally neglected, there's literally nothing that can be done. But secondly, this relies on somebody seeing and noticing and reporting. And I've spoken with people, for example, who as soon as a grandparent, you know, they were receiving a deficient education, as soon as the grandparent expressed interest or, you know, concern, the parents cut the grandparent off. And it's really hard to try to report when you have nothing to report. So parents, when they are educationally neglecting their kids in these situations, can cut off anyone who expresses any concern. And, you know, it takes a lot to call social services. And I've spoken to people who, you know, like there's a woman I know whose brother is educationally neglecting his homeschool kids. She hasn't reported it because she doesn't want to mess up her relationship
with a family.
Out.
Sure. Yeah. Let me invite our listeners again to jump into our conversation. And Ian is from Derry. Go ahead, Ian. You're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I just wanted to throw in my two cents as a homeschooling parent as to why we chose to go that route. And I think it's something that hasn't explicitly been mentioned yet, but maybe hinted at, especially with the unschooling comment a few moments ago. Our choice to homeschool our kids, we have seven kids and between the ages of 17 and one, and we've homeschooled them all. And it's really, for us, a question of difference of educational philosophy as a whole. You know, if we wanted to simply replicate a classroom at home, you know, for us, ways that might be a bit of a fool's errand. You know, teachers have the education, they have the structure, they can do it better than we can at home. But, you know, if I could boil down, I guess, our desired philosophy, educational philosophy, to two points, it would be this. It would be first that education and learning happens all the time, and that it's not just confined to the hours that school is in session, and it's not just confined to the times that the students have access to the teachers, that it's happening all the time.
Sure, I think any parent would agree with you there. I mean, I don't homeschool my kids, but certainly they're learning from me. So, yeah. Go ahead,
sure,
Ian,
absolutely.
Your second point.
In a homeschool environment, especially kind of the unschooling movement, it's maybe taken to the next where you're not, and this is a very I'm painting with, I understand here, but, you know, it's not simply taking a teacher to teach your kids, you know, X, Y, Z, you know, it's really, I think one of maybe it was your guest caller, again, a few minutes ago, that mentioned the unschooling movement.
Sure.
About providing a rich environment for your child. to be learning things like math, like science, all the time. And the second point would be that our goal is really to teach our children how to learn, to teach them what to think. To teach them how to think, as opposed to teaching them what to think. And I think those two points, that education happens all the time, and that we're trying to produce students, we're trying to produce learners, we're trying to produce thinkers,
okay,
not simply regurgitators of information. And some schools are better at not doing that than others, but I do believe that overall that's kind of the conundrum that the public school system is in right now.
Well, Ian, thank you very much for calling in and sharing your experience, given that you're homeschooling 7 kids. Wow. Here's an email from Debbie who says, I don't have a problem with homeschooling, but I believe we as a society would be better off investing our energy and money improving our public schools. Debbie says, by the way, regarding gifted students, it's possible to get support for gifted students in public schools. Happens in our school system. Debbie, thank you for the email. Here's an email from Iris who says, my name is Iris. I'm 12 and I've been homeschooling my whole life. Homeschooling works for me because it gives me more time to do the things I love. I get to spend hours playing my guitar and ukulele every day. I love music. It's my passion. If I went to school, I wouldn't have as much time to do the things I love. Also, the idea of waking up at 5:30 like my friend who goes to school horrifies me. It's inhumane. Iris, I know some other kids who think the same way you do, that the scheduling is tough, especially on high school students. What do you think, Rachel, about that last call that we got from Ian, who says, look, you know, this is our educational philosophy. We want to create learners, not people who regurgitate. That is a criticism that you hear of traditional education.
I think that, you know, public schools vary from school to school in what kind of an education they provide. But I think unschooling, in the philosophy he was kind of describing, creating a rich educational environment and encouraging children to follow their interests, I think that absolutely is a viable method of education. And I absolutely support it when done well by parents who, you know, create that environment. I do think the forms of assessment we support allow for that. We are not saying that we want to require homeschooling parents to recreate the school environment at home. And in fact, we recommend not simply requiring, say, testing each year. We recommend giving parents the option to put together a portfolio of student materials and have it reviewed by a certified teacher or other qualified individual, which is, in fact, the way assessment takes place in New Hampshire, except that you then don't have to turn that assessment into anyone, so it doesn't, you know, actually flag cases of neglect. But that sort of portfolio review offers opportunities for families like his and this little girl, this 12-year-old girl you just read from her email. She could easily put together something that includes the sort of music she's doing. You know, it really allows for that sort of diversity in educational approach while still saying, hey, let's make sure learning is taking place.
So you would say, Rachel, that, and again, you're generally had a good homeschool experience. You would say assessments by an outsider would be good just to make sure there isn't what you call educational neglect.
Those are critically important because the reason that in some families, including some families I knew growing up, the reason there's educational neglect is not because the parents didn't realize it. It's because they're allowing it to happen. So if you have just the parents do an assessment, which actually is how it works in Georgia, the parents assess their own kids, of course the parents are going to say the kids are fine.
Okay, and let me just jump in, Rachel. And
outside accountability.
Yeah. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Let me just ask Amy what she thinks, and then we have a lot more people who want to jump in. Go ahead, Amy.
Sure. It's a provision of the homeschool law in New Hampshire that you have to provide an evaluation each year for each of the children that you're homeschooling. And there are three different options for providing that evaluation. You could either do a standardized test, a portfolio review, or a third option that is an agreement between the parent and the participating agency, which they notified when they began their home education program. And the purpose of the evaluation is for the parent to really see how their child is performing. You want to show that there's progress commensurate with the child's age and ability. So there is, an evaluation requirement in New Hampshire. And I want to also point out that in New Hampshire, since 1979, we've had a law where every citizen is a mandatory reporter. So if anyone sees an abuse or neglect that they believe is going on in their community, that they should report that.
So homeschooling parents have to provide an evaluation Amy, who do they provide it to, and what does that person do if they feel like, ooh, your kid's in seventh grade and
you had to turn that evaluation into your participating agency.
And the school district.
Well, it could be the school district or it could be a non-public school that you're working with. However, you don't turn that into anyone. You still have to provide the evaluation. You have to have it completed, and you have to keep that on file.
And but does anybody see it?
No, not anymore. I mean, the parent sees it, of course, and it's so that they can make improvements in their program for the following year.
So is anybody keeping track outside of the parents in terms of how well the kids might be doing?
Well, nobody is actually collecting data, but, yeah, it's the home education program that is – they're all individual. So,
why do you think there was this pullback in 2011, Amy, in terms of requirements, reporting, oversight, and so forth?
Well, I think that there was some degree of politics going on because of the legislature changing control multiple times in a few years. So there had been a change in the law in 2006 removing the curriculum reporting requirement. And after that happened, there was pushback when the legislature changed hands. And we spent a lot of time in Concord fighting much more restrictive regulation. And then when the legislature changed hands again, it swung back the other way. And
we've had these big political waves from Democrat to Republican and so forth.
Yeah, so we've been going back and forth with this for a number of years.
As somebody who homeschools her four kids and, you know, clearly you have the best interest of your kids and all the homeschooling kids in New Hampshire at heart, Amy, and that's clear. How do you feel about this relative lack of oversight in terms of what kids need to know to function successfully in society?
Well, I mean, there is a list of subjects in the law that we're required to teach our children. So it's not like there's no blueprint out there for what it is that we're required to do. But I feel like it's, like I said before, short of abuse and neglect, it's not really the state's business to know exactly what it is that we're teaching our children so long as we're following the law.
Let's take another call, and this is Andrew in Keene. Hi, Andrew. Go ahead. You're in the exchange.
Hi. I wanted to go back to a comment near the beginning of the program about special needs and special education. And I was just wondering what your guests were thinking about how the parent might ensure that they're getting a quality alternative program, given that they may not have as many resources or as much of a structure as the public school system might have.
And is this a personal concern of yours, Andrew?
Sort of.
Yeah. Okay.
Can I actually answer that?
Go ahead, Rachel.
Needs. So I grew up in Indiana, and my sister had special needs. And my mom looked into, she had specifically Down syndrome. My mom looked into, you know, whether she, you know, what was available through the public school system. And the requirement, it seems, if I remember correctly, was, you know, she could get services if she attended. But my mom didn't want to send her to school. She'd homeschooled the rest of us. And so she decided to homeschool her as well. And so what she did is look around for different, you know, sort of therapy programs she could put her in. And so she was always going to the rehab center downtown to have physical therapy, occupational therapy, et cetera. So she found sort of other avenues for providing therapy. She also connected with the local Down syndrome support group and so would, you know, sort of ask for resources within that. And she would check out books from the library on, for example, teaching your child with Down syndrome to read. I mean, there are a lot of books actually that focus specifically on teaching children with Down syndrome. And so she tried to educate herself for, you know, to help herself to help my sister. And so, you know, my sister is 14 now. Actually, she just turned 15. And, you know, she's able to read quite well. And I don't know how she'd be if she was evaluated by a professional specifically in all areas, but I do know that her speech therapist kept saying we need to take a hiatus because her speech is totally on target. So, you know, there are sort of other avenues. It's just in the hands of the homeschooling parent to put those together. And that means they have to go out there and get those resources. They can't rely on to the school district providing them there in the school necessarily. Although my understanding is in New Hampshire, you can get special education services through the school in certain forms.
Did you want to jump in on that, Amy? Because both of you said early on that, you know, special needs are one reason why parents do choose to homeschool.
Sure. The special education is provided by public schools so that students can be successful in the general education curriculum of the public school. So if you choose to withdraw your child from the public school system, they no longer need to be successful in that general education curriculum. So at that point, special education services become an optional service that school districts can provide but are not required to. So many times school districts will allow some homeschooled students to come in and participate in different special education services, but some districts don't, and in which case it would be the parent would have to search outside of the school.
Well, thank you for the call, Andrew. And here's an email from Deborah who says, while there's a rather robust homeschool community in southern New Hampshire, we encounter far too many parents interested in bucking the system and rejecting traditional school rather than truly educating their children. Sadly, Deborah says, we meet too many 10-year-olds who can't read, 14-year-olds who are stagnating with math skills, and an overwhelming ethos of, quote, children will teach themselves when they're ready. Deborah says having some responsible benchmarks in the state and accountability would most definitely deter some of the parents we met who were homeschooling for dubious reasons and save these children from becoming uneducated adults. Amy, we talked about this earlier, but here's someone who's kind of pushing back to what you said, that, you know, parents need to choose. She's saying that society has an interest in making sure that kids know the basics. I just wonder how you feel about this email.
Yes, of course. There is a compelling interest of the state to make sure that we have educated citizens. However, I think that it was mentioned earlier as well that children learn multiple ways, and just because you don't put a book in front of someone doesn't mean they're not learning. And learning doesn't stop when you hit 18 either. So if you haven't been exposed to a particular topic, then you can still have the opportunity to learn it as an adult.
Well, and here's an email from Becky in Dover who says, listening to the show, as far as it being expensive to homeschool and it takes two incomes to support it, Becky says, no, no, no. I'm a single, low-income homeschooling mom, and I don't spend a fortune on homeschool. I get educators' discounts. Libraries give out free passes. If you want to save a dollar, Becky says, you'll learn how to save that dollar. All of you, we've run out of time. There's so much more that we could talk about. Rachel, thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Rachel Coleman, Executive Director of the Coalition for Responsible Home Education, a group founded by homeschool alumni. And Amy Gall, good to talk to you. Thank you all so very much.
Thank you very much.
That's Amy Gall, Chair of the State's Home Education Advisory Council, Coordinator of the New Hampshire Homeschooling Coalition. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producer is Faith Meixel. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Canoy.